Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to These Football Times 2025 League Cup Final Preamble. I've on the Zencaster little box where you put the title of the podcast, I've gone for L. Aidan Scragico. Because it's Liverpool versus Newcastle United on Sunday, Aidan.
It is. What could possibly go wrong? I can barely contain my excitement at the moment. It just feels like walking towards impending doom.
Oh, it might not be so bad. Might not necessarily. I mean, I'm sensing a little bit of reverse psychology of play here. I'm on to you, Aidan.
Yeah, there might be a few instances of that this evening. I mean, after all, not every club is able to beat PSG in the Champions League.
Exactly. You know, we've been put through our paces big time there on Tuesday night. We've been stretched to extra time, penalties. We're put through the mill for what, 220 minutes plus injury time over two games there. We've seen Trent Alexander-Arnold limp off into the ether. Kanate couldn't finish the game. We've got a little bit. I'm going for my own reverse psychology. Yeah. Here, can you tell what I'm doing? Am I really that transparent?
This could just be a tennis match of negativity here, couldn't it?
Lulling you into a false sense of security, Aidan, before we go for the sucker punch.
As a Newcastle fan, there is no such thing as a sense of any type of security.
Fair enough. I can fully appreciate this. But Aidan, you know, a second League Cup final in a short space of time. Eddie Howe. What are our thoughts on Eddie Howe, Newcastle United manager?
Oh, largely positive. Absolutely. I think there's been videos circling around on various social platforms this week about the transformation since he took over. Now, yes, big asterisks next to all that of what else has helped the transformation. But in terms of what he's brought to it, he took a club on the brink of relegation and brought them up to mid-table and that season, then to the Champions League the next season, then thumping PSG the following season before, you know, lack of squad depth and injuries took their toll. But they're still, you know, now fighting along at the higher ends of the table, shall we say. I think on the whole, he has been nothing but positive for Newcastle United. I think occasionally, perhaps he lacks a little bit of a plan B at times, but I think that's just us not looking at what else goes on behind the scenes and what else he's doing, you know, not quite understanding all the intricacies. He does come up with alternative plans that sometimes work out for the best. Sometimes he's a bit scuppered by a lack of depth and, you know, one or two injuries throw that a bit out of whack and there's very little he can do. But I think overall, he's been extremely positive for Newcastle. He's very determined. He's very hardworking. He's got very fixed ideas of how it should work, how it should play. He's also got that ruthless side to him. It doesn't always appear that way, but I think behind the scenes that by all accounts, he very much does. But also he leads innovative, interesting types of training that I think gets the players interested and gets them galvanized in some ways. Doesn't always appear that way on a weekend, but I think it's largely positive behind the scenes of how things are and how they work. He's got an identity and a style that again comes and goes at times, but I think that's in part due to the fact that we don't rotate very much as a squad and tiredness and same ends up getting in the way of that a little bit. But I think, yeah, largely on the whole, very, very good. But if I think back to when he took over, he was second choice, of course, behind someone else who's actually really flourishing in the Premier League right now, which was Unai Emery, who was on the brink of taking the job and then had a change of heart because he wanted to continue a bit longer in Spain where he was. If you think of what alternative path it might have been, I could only see it going a similar way because he was very good as well and he's showing how good he is at Villa. But equally, Eddie Howe has done superbly well. There's you know, occasional Twitter rumblings from various subsets of the fan base whenever we have a defeat or two, or in some recent occasions where they've kind of stepped aside seemingly and let other teams just go through and beat them at will. Every time there's a little bad patch or a bad result, the same people come out of the woodwork and say, oh, Eddie Howe has to go, Eddie Howe has to go. And of course, the reality is that this is one group of people, and then the positive people are a different set of people. People aren't changing their views game to game. I think every club has an element of this, but I think largely on the whole, the fan base is still very much with him up until a point where something really goes truly off the rails. I can't see anything changing in that. I think it would be terrific for him and obviously the club if he were to top that off with something shiny, but we'll have to see on that, I guess.
Just going with that, what would this mean to Newcastle if you get it over the line on Sunday?
And I'll tell you what it would mean, as well,
the second part of that question, what would be the target next, should that be the case?
I can't even consider that aspect, because actually winning something has never seemed like a realistic ambition, even when we do reach a final. What would it mean to Newcastle if they were to win? I'll tell you what it would mean is an awful lot more than it would mean to you and Liverpool. that's not meaning to be disparaging. I just think that's pretty clear that Liverpool is a club who get into these situations regularly. As much as I'm sure you would heartily celebrate a victory, as would the fans, players, etc., deep down, it wouldn't mean as much as it would for a club that doesn't win stuff. I think that's just a reality. And therefore, I think, oh, crikey, I can't even contemplate, because the last time we won something was before I was born. And yes, I am 50. So that says a lot. It would mean validation of so many things. It would mean not a reversal, but a change in perception from a fan base. You go into these things every season. You go into a cup competition largely thinking, well, this isn't going to go anywhere. It might go a few rounds or it might go many rounds, but even so, deep down, you can't actually picture it going all the way. And here we are talking on almost the eve of a cup final, and as you say, the second in 3 years or three seasons for Newcastle. And it still doesn't feel like we're on the brink of maybe winning something. It's an odd thing, and maybe it's the mentality of a supporter of a team that hasn't had success, and therefore you naturally assume it's not going to come your way. The natural pessimism of someone who's had any optimism beat him out of them by years of disappointment, I guess. I don't know. Because it's the Carabao Cup, it wouldn't maybe mean as much as had they won the Premier League 29 years ago, I have to now call it, just to make us feel extra old. That would have probably felt even more special given the style, the team, the age I was and all of that. But still, I mean, it would be pretty incredible, and the celebrations would be something extraordinary. And I dare to say probably more extraordinary than what would happen if Liverpool won the Carabao Cup, because frankly, you'll probably have your bigger celebration for something else in May.
Well, fingers crossed on that one.
It would take some doing to screw that one.
It would take some doing to screw that one up now at 15 points clear with 9 to go. It would be exceptionally slipshod of us to do that.
But I would say about this game though, Stephen, coming up, is that we talk about what it would mean to Newcastle versus what it would mean to Liverpool. I think, though, admittedly, Liverpool's had a hard night the other night and a couple of little niggles. But I think Newcastle are missing more and don't have that depth that Liverpool do have. I honestly think if Liverpool don't win this, I wouldn't say embarrassment because that's silly, but I think it would be a big shock if you look at it rationally. And I think in the space of a few days to have lost out in the Champions League, then to lose out in the Carabao, having a month earlier lost in the FA Cup, when all the talk then, not from fans, I guess, but you know, the wider football base was about how Liverpool were the best in Europe and going to win the lot, to end up with only one, and only the Premier League, that would be odd. But I think under the circumstances, to not beat this Newcastle team who are missing so much, I think that would be quite a shock.
A good return to reverse psychology there, Aidan.
Yep.
I like it. Paul McParlan on the TFT WhatsApp podcast group has been very, very vocal in his hope that Newcastle do get this over the line. He has been far more invested than I have been within the week or two building up to this final. Don't get me wrong, by Sunday, I'll be you know, ready for this, and it'll be the biggest game in the history of the world. in the eye of the storm of Sunday. But yeah, from a Liverpool perspective, yeah, we win on Sunday, it will feel great. We'll celebrate it massively. Monday morning, it'll be back to business.
There you go. That's the difference. Exactly. I was going to ask what it is.
Yeah, that is the difference, though. That afterglow will wear off within 24 to 48 hours. Where I know for Newcastle, you know, win on Sunday, you'll ride that vibe through the summer onwards until kind of the start of next season. You know, and
exactly. The rest of the league can almost be damned at that point. You know, it'll just go along in the background almost.
Had it been against anyone, yes, obviously there's that, you know, shadow of ownership and all that type of stuff. But you know, I'm a football fan and romantic at heart in that respect, and it's kind of like you see beyond that to the club that they are and the fan base and the city itself and all that. If you're playing anyone else, Aidan. Absolutely anyone else. I'm hearing exactly the same as what Paul McParlan is saying.
I'm sure two years ago you were very much thinking that, given who we were playing then.
But I think, absolutely.
I mean, it's our misfortune, I think, in recent times, by which I mean the last quarter century or a little over, to whenever we've got to a final, we seem to be up against the best team in the land. Now, okay, a couple of years ago, that wasn't quite right, but even then, Manchester United were on an upward trajectory coming into that game, whereas Newcastle had slipped a little bit. But this is against Liverpool, who are obviously flying away with the Premier League. 99 was against Manchester United, about to win a treble. 98 was against Arsenal, about to win a double. It's almost like on each occasion we're hiding to nothing. We're not really in great position to win. You know, it would be nice if just for once we could have a final against someone who was a step below the best, or maybe a few places below us. You know, I don't even want to go too long into the list of clubs who have won a trophy since Newcastle did, because it's
don't,
not
don't do it, Aidan. Don't do it.
It's not pleasant reading. There are some very small clubs on there. To cite a couple, Oxford, Luton. Deary me. There's a couple of small clubs in the northeast on there as well. I don't want to go into that.
I know. Look at Middlesbrough. Sorry, Rob Fletcher, but come on. Bolton Wanderers.
Exactly. Like, exactly. Yeah. When Swansea won it, who do they get to beat? Third division, Bradford.
Bradford. Fourth division, as I'd still call them.
Well, yeah. Why? And we have to get bloody Liverpool.
I mean, unreal, typical. Unreal. Even Hull City further down the coast. The East Coast have reached an FA Cup final in what, the last 10 years or so, haven't they?
And gave it a damn good go. And that's the thing, is that Newcastle, in my memory of them in cup finals, have never really given it a proper go. That's not for the want of trying, I'm sure, but it's just the way it's played out. They've always been outclassed, really, and hardly laid a punch on the opposition. Now, if it plays out on Sunday that we get beaten by what is undoubtedly a better team, but we actually give it a right go and we, you know, sow a few seeds of doubt at some point, dare I say it, even score a goal, that would be something. We haven't scored a goal in a final since 1976. That would be at least something to cling to, even if it ends in defeat. You can take defeat to a better team if you've given it a good go. I think that's what I'm trying to say here in a bad way. And our previous three cup finals, I don't think that's really the case. So, you know, I'm going into this with no expectation given the opposition, but I am going with hope, of course. There has to be hope, otherwise what on earth's the point? And while I naturally obviously hope they win, I think the disappointment level won't be as big as if it was against somebody other than Liverpool, because you're so clearly far and away the best team in England right now, despite what PSG have just done to you and what Plymouth did to you. I think it would be foolish to state otherwise, and therefore to lose having given it a right go, I can take that. It would it won't be as good as if we win. But away from St. James's Park, it's almost like we barely ever lay a glove on Liverpool. So admittedly, we haven't played you at Wembley since 1974 when we didn't lay a glove on you. But we shall see.
I mean, there is hope there, Aidan. There definitely is hope. I mean,
there has to be some hope. I'm sounding overly negative here, aren't I?
There has to be. I mean, you've dismantled a fine Arsenal side in the semi-final there. You know, you have risen to the occasion to reach Wembley. There's no doubt about it. And I suppose if you beat Arsenal in the semi-finals, who, you know, yeah, they've self-destructed somewhat in the Premier League, but there they are, kind of like quarterfinals of the Champions League. You know, they still play some fine football when they can remain focused, shall we say. And then if you lift the cup, then it's you have to beat Liverpool to do it as well. That's a hell of an achievement, you know, if that is to come to fruition, Aidan.
So I could take that even further. If you look at all the clubs that we've played in this year's competition, excluding AFC Wimbledon and... yeah, that's probably the only one to really exclude. But we've beaten several of the teams who are currently above us in the league, and we're in sixth place. But we've beaten Nottingham Forest away on penalties. We've beaten Chelsea at home, and we've beaten Arsenal over two legs. There's also Brentford in there as well, although admittedly they had made a fair number of changes. So three of the five clubs who are above us in the league have all been beaten so far in this cup run, and there is one more.
Now, that is an epic set. I mean, even Wimbledon, it's the when you talk potential banana skins, there's a Wimbledon side who, you know, they're up there challenging for promotion. They're outdoing the MK Dons. You know, they're a club with a, you know, new stadium, a spring.
Let's not overplay them too much, though.
Yeah, I mean, we've lost to Plymouth. God's sake, Aidan, we've just lost to Plymouth. You know, that you know, magic propensity of a cup to bite you on the arse is kind of like, you know. So if that had been Everton playing Wimbledon in the earlier rounds, then it'd have been a shock if Everton had gone through at that point in time, surely. So, you know, don't be downing, kind of like, you know, the Newcastle vibe.
Well, this is it. The vibe has changed because over the last few weeks, so... Having reached the cup final, and yes, as you say, the games against and the performances against Arsenal home and away were both absolutely superb. Eddie House really seems to have Arteta's number, which is terrific from our perspective. But following that, we've had a meek defeat at Man City. We snuck past Forest, having nearly thrown it away. Then we turned up at Anfield and just let you have the nice win, nice and easily, as usual. Then we've had Anthony Gordon, Liverpool fan Anthony Gordon, of course. Paul McParlan would hate it if I didn't mention that. Liverpool fan Anthony Gordon getting his crazy red card and ruling himself out of the final. We've had Lewis Hall getting injured, and with that we've lost our entire regular left side. And that also, I think, has a big impact on Isak's supply line. Then we've had Sven Botman confirming his knee knack for the rest of the season. We've got Isak with groin tightness and general poor form, which we always seem to have with the final on the horizon. So everything was going a bit, you could say, we'd gone all Newcastle again. You know, the prospect of a final on the horizon, and suddenly everything goes bad and we lose form because every thought is on this final and it's all going wrong. But then we had the other night in Liverpool against PSG, and from Newcastle's perspective, that couldn't have gone any better, except for perhaps Salah tearing a hamstring or something along those lines. Firstly, just the mere fact it went the distance was all we could have hoped for. Potential of Trent Alexander-Arnold missing the final again, you know, an injury. It doesn't sound pleasant, but, you know, as football fans, I'm sure anyone else would have been thinking the same in our position, that it would be nice if Liverpool picked up one or two injuries. And of course, the general, I guess, despondency and tiredness as well that comes from an epic encounter that it was, and leaving Liverpool out of a competition that many said they were the best place to win. And obviously, Liverpool had been top of the group stage. Rather unfortunate to come up against probably the other best club in Europe. But hey-ho, that's the way it goes. So that has given us a slight improvement in general vibe, I think. Only slight, because it's still Liverpool, it's still strong. But what I did like seeing was the sort of disdain that Mo Salah had for Darwin Nunez when he missed his penalty, and everyone else was applauding and trying to support him, and Salah just stood to the side looking grumpy. That was nice to see, I think, because that makes it look as though all is not as harmonious as you might always appear. You clutch at these little straws to try and think, oh, well, okay, maybe they're not so invincible after all, and maybe a couple of things have redressed the balance in our favour. We shall see. But, you know, these are the straws I'm clinging to. After all the things that had been going wrong for us, it possibly went as well as it could possibly have done from a Newcastle perspective with Liverpool's last game. So that's given a little hint to go in with.
It absolutely has. It absolutely has. 120 minutes of and that will have taken a lot out of the legs of a lot of players. Similar to what you said about Eddie Howe, you know, not rotating his team all that much. Arne Slot does not shift his main core 11 all that much. You know, he lopped in a Curtis Jones here and there in midfield. Obviously, there's that little bit of rotation with Cody Gakpo, but, you know, there's... And some of that, even though, has come down to injuries with Jota being in and out injured. You know, so with a Gakpo injured, you've got... I mean, it's intriguing. We're 15 points clear at the top of the Premier League. Yet you're looking at, from a Liverpool perspective, we're looking at that team and thinking, well, there's room for improvement, because we're not seeing kind of like the expansive playmaking, you know, fullbacks in Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson doing as well as he did during the Klopp era. You know, we're looking at it and saying, well, that's Mo Salah, who's kind of like a few years old, even though he's still ripping it up. You know, I mean, I had a chat with an Everton fan called Max Carlisle not so long ago, and he's one of the best Blues knocking around. He loves football across the board. Works for TNT Sport, so you know he's around Liverpool in a lot of Liverpool games. So he's kind of like that. Those edges of kind of like, you know, of the stereotypical bitterness of Everton fans sometimes. Sorry, Paul McPartlin. but if the cap fits, shall we say, we do have that, you know. So Max has that, you know, he enjoys watching the. He said, "I enjoy watching the style of Liverpool play and all that type of stuff." And you know, he was asking me about that demographic because he says his mates do. They're not, you know, he has a 50-50 in Liverpool supporting friends that some are pro Nunes and some are anti Nunes, or not anti Nunes, but they basically lose the cool over them. So it was interesting kind of like chatting the demographic of that Liverpool forward line with him, which it ended up being kind of like 15 minutes worth of therapy, I think it was. Because it was kind of like, you're looking back at that Mane, Firmino, Salah, triumvirate that was just so fantastic, so interwoven together, all of them at the peak of their powers. And then now we've got kind of like, well, Diogo Jota came in and he would score a lot of goals, but his overall game would drift somewhat. He'd be out of the game and out of the picture for long periods of time, and it didn't seem like he was contributing much, but then there'd be a goal. But then he's kind of like grown in stature, but then so has his injury problems. You know, his track record's pretty shocking, you know, in recent seasons. You know, Luis Diaz is a kind of like a replacement for Sadio Mane. Skilled beyond belief, some of the things he can do is magnificent, but the end product isn't always there. Yet he's our second top scorer this season behind Salah. There's a lot of kind of like bizarre fluctuations amongst all this. Cody Gakpo came in and had a few problems when he first arrived, but every time he plays now, he looks like the grown-up in the room, you know, and it's a relief that he's in there. Yet going into Sunday, he's coming off the back of an injury where he's not fully fit. You know, so if he plays a part on Sunday, it's either going to be from the bench or he's going to start and he's going to last for maybe an hour or so. And if that's, then that's the full scheme of things. That might only be half a game, you know, if it goes all the distance. So, you know, we do have these kind of like little fun. And you know, we're going to have Gerald Quantar playing at right back, you know, who going into the season, if Arne Slot's writing down a list of, you know, a pecking order of right backs, then Quansah is at number four there, you know, because it's Trent Alexander-Arnold, it's Conor Bradley, it's Joe Gomez who can cover the role. Yet all of them are injured going into Wembley. So there's these interesting caveats, because if that's a game on Sunday that goes into extra time, then from, I think, a Newcastle point of view, given the injuries they've got, you know, the injuries that Liverpool are suddenly mounting up, and they've been a, you know, a bit of an undercurrent all season because Alisson was missing for the best part of a month and a half. Given what happened against PSG as well in the week, you know, if that goes, I just hope the game finishes in 90 minutes because that's going to be an absolute car crash of a 30 minutes of extra time on both sides.
Yes.
They're all going to be walking around like the extras in The Walking Dead, basically. you know, there's going to be a lot of cramp kicking in, and then it's going to be a very, very tired penalty shootout.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And well, Newcastle's bench isn't going to be much to write home about in terms of quality along those lines, as you say, of injuries and depth and so on. And yeah, it will be interesting if it goes that far of who's actually still on the pitch and who's there to take part.
An interesting experiment in human nature, that would be the most fascinating part of this game going into extra time, because they are just going to be punch drunk without a shadow of a doubt. Aidan, Newcastle's overall relationship with the League Cup. We'll just take a little look.
Dire, I think, is essentially that.
Twice beaten finalists, going back to the early days. Newcastle, you know, first took part in the very first season, 60-61, knocked out in the first round. And beyond that, it took until 1974-75 for them to bypass through to beyond the third round, a run to the quarterfinals took place, followed the following year by that run to the final for the first time, where they lost to Man City. That Dennis Chewett overhead kick. And then after that, it's an absolute shocking run all the way up to the Premier League era. The fourth round in 76-77, which equates to the quarterfinals. It's like going to the fifth round of the FA Cup. It's the last round before the quarterfinals. But they don't reach a quarterfinal again until 96. It's a hell of a...
And then bloody Lee Dixon did a set that day, kicking Ginola all over the place to cause a little reaction and Ginola getting sent off. And that was dashed.
The provocation is terrible.
The good thing is I got over it quick.
Yeah, I can tell. Quarterfinals again, 97-98. Quarterfinals, 2001-02. Quarterfinals, 06-07. 14-15 made the quarterfinals. 2016-17 as a championship side. Quarterfinals again, 2021. Then runners up 22-23 quarterfinals last year.
What that makes stark though is, firstly, yes, Newcastle's cup reputation from long and distant past is not a League Cup reputation; it's an FA Cup reputation. And it also shows that through a lot of modern times, they hadn't really bothered to try in the cups, whereas in the three seasons or however many goes Eddie Howe's at the League Cup. Yeah, he wouldn't have had it in his first season, would have been long knocked out before he turned up. So in his three attempts at this competition, we've done quite well, all things considered. So that's quite a turnaround, but it stems from actually desiring and wanting to do well in cups, or to do well across the board rather than merely exist. And that's at a novelty factor for us in recent times, it has to be said. But yeah, the League Cup has really not been a happy hunting ground. And when you flip that around to Liverpool, when I was a young lad, Liverpool seemed to win it every bloody season. And you won it many times since, against Chelsea in penalty shootouts.
Absolutely. And this is what that one sense of foreboding for Sunday from a Liverpool perspective is, that in the 21st century, I don't think... There's not many cup finals Liverpool have been involved in that have been simple, formulaic, 90 minutes, all done, no sweat. There has been a very highly defined do it the hard way effect to all these, you know, be it Istanbul, be it, you know, actually being the better team in the 2007 Champions League final and losing a disastrous finals in Kiev. You know, I mean, suppose Tottenham and the Champions League final 2019 probably point to beating Man United in the League Cup final 2003. But, you know, you're looking at things like West Ham 3-3 win on penalties. We're looking at kind of like, you know, absolutely, you know, the those Chelsea finals that was just absolutely nothing in them, losing to City in a penalty shootout in a League Cup final. You know, there's a lot of chaos surrounding these games for Liverpool. And I have sneaking suspicion that more chaos is going to be afoot on Sunday.
Well, I hope so, really, because to be honest, chaos, shithousery and carnage is our best bet.
The thing is that chaos opens the door for your opponents. So there is, you know, given that kind of track record, Aidan, I'm not seeing Liverpool. It's not going to be like the league game at Anfield. It's going to be more like the league game at St. James Park earlier in the season.
And that was chaotic, without a doubt at all. But I guess, flipping around, you were asking about how earlier. Obviously, for Arne Slot, this is his first season at Liverpool. He is going to end it with a trophy. And it's been, you know, ultimately hugely successful, no matter what we jest about, the ones you've got knocked out from. But this is obviously his chance to pick up a first piece of silverware before the one that he knows he's going to pick up later. I guess for him, rather than Liverpool as a whole, I assume the ambition for him is even stronger than maybe it is for the rest of the club. I'm sure, you know, Liverpool doesn't want to not win, obviously. But for him, I think there might be just that extra little bit because, you know, this would be his first. It would be a bit of validation for everything he's doing and obviously achieving. And ultimately, if this hugely successful season, considering the number of defeats you've actually had all season, which is 3, is it? Or maybe 4 in total? I don't know. It's not a lot.
Yeah, not many.
To only end up with one trophy, that might feel a little bit, I don't know, flat at the end, especially when you don't have, in the league, you're not going to have a big final day flourish. You'll win it 5 games before the end.
I'm looking forward to that.
I'm absolutely sure.
So much looking forward to that.
It'll be easy and restful, but it won't have the sort of final day drama or excitement that a cup final brings or that sometimes league titles bring. I imagine then for him, winning a first trophy as soon as possible would be huge.
Oh, yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. You know, I mean, anyone associated with Liverpool wants to win this. So there's no doubt about it. We're not going in. You know. But yeah, the focus has been so Premier League-centric this time around. And as a fan base, it's 35 years since we've had that title party because 2020 COVID interrupted it. You know, none of us were in the stadium for the trophy lift. So it's felt like unfinished business in that respect. That, you know, the title winning party is what, so within that there's blinkers on, which is kind of like played its part in, you know, a highly changed team at home park, you know, losing to a determined Plymouth, you know, to being, you know, outforced by PSG. You know, the energy in PSG legs is unreal over those 2 games. And yeah, you know, I've chatted with people about kind of like Liverpool's exit from the Champions League in the week and not shrugged it off because obviously, you know, you want to win it and everything, but it's different being knocked out of the Champions League in those terms when you're 15 points ahead of Arsenal rather than 15 points behind Arsenal. I'd we lost PSG in the week and we were 15 points behind Arsenal in the league and then we're going into Sunday thinking, Christ, this might be the only thing that...
This is your only chance, yeah.
it is a different matter. So, you know, I think in the fan base, there's a relaxed vibe about this final, which is either a good thing, going to be a good thing, or it's going to be a bad thing because how determined and switched on Newcastle are going to be, certainly in those opening 20 minutes, might well dictate how that final pans out across the entirety of the afternoon.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we'll know quite early on if Newcastle are in it or not. The intensity, the press, how many people Joe Linton's clattered into, all of these things I think will be quite apparent quite early of whether Newcastle are having one of their on days or one of their off days. So yeah, we'll see quite soon. And I think you talk about the relaxed fan base as well. I mean, that's one thing that Newcastle fan base is not. Going into a cup final weekend, we don't get them very often, and therefore there's a tendency to overdo it. And I think this is definitely something that's been mentioned about the final 2 years ago, is that aside from the players on the pitch, the fan base kind of overdid it on the weekend. There's a sort of phrase that goes around of, well, we won the weekend and lost the match, because again, that was against another team who was quite used to going to these finals. And I'm sure we can throw in a little joke there that most of the Man United fans just could go easily from their homes on the day of the final because they live close by. But you know, I'll let that one slide. But you know, it's a bigger deal, I think is the obvious point there, because it's a rarity. So the tendency to overdo it in the partying stakes is a big factor for the fans last time around. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this time. What they won't be doing is dominating Trafalgar Square, because that's shut for some St. Patrick's Day stuff, I believe. So Newcastle fans have been told to congregate in Covent Garden, of all places, on the Saturday. I can't see that going well, because exactly, it feels a little bit too, let's say Trafalgar Square is rather more open plan than Covent Garden. I think there's a few nice bars and cafes and lots of tourists around. I fear for the reputation of Geordies based on that one, but we'll see how that goes. But if anyone's got an energy left for the game on Saturday in the fan base, that would be a step up from last time. Equally, I think on the playing side, I think, because again, that was the first final for 24 years at the time. And again, I think there was a bit of a tendency to overdo the emotion of it all. There was sort of letters from family and friends for the players and all this, that, and the other that a club like Liverpool would never do for a League Cup final. And, you know, it's a different mentality. It's a club that wins regularly against a club that doesn't. And therefore, you know, there is a tendency to do these different things. I get the sense that this time around it's a little bit more like it's another game rather than treating it like a huge one-off occasion. Obviously, it's a little more than that, but I think it's not being overplayed in quite the same way. So hopefully that will leave the players with a bit of energy, emotional energy to give on the day to, as I say, at least give it a fight. If they go down having given it a fight, I'll be able to take that. It'll be disappointing. It'll be another year onto the big list of how long it's been since Newcastle have won something, but at least it'll be easier to take, because it's against a better team and will have given it a go. And that's as far as I can really take my levels of hope too far. I can picture what the celebrations might look like should it happen, but I also find it very hard to see that that's the likely outcome at all. But I have to go in with hope.
You definitely have to go in with hope. What you've got to look at as well is that, you know, yes, that experience of having done it 2 years ago, Eddie Howe is on record as saying we wouldn't do it the same way, you know, in terms of preparation. You know, you've got to take him at his word for that. It will be a different Newcastle. It's just down to performance and stepping up and not being fazed by, you know, what it's going to be. Give me your... I'm not going to ask for predictions. I'm not going to ask for predictions. I'm going to, because we're going to reprise this after the final. We're going to do part two of this after the final, right? whether you want to or not. whether I want to or not, that's the. What I'm going to suggest here, the only prediction I'm going to ask here, I'm going to ask a prediction of your starting lineup. We'll see how close that we are to being football Nostradamus for this.
Right. Okay. I mean, this shouldn't be as hard as it might have been with more options available. I think there's only a couple of areas of potential contention in the Newcastle team. The first of those is in goal. He switched around quite a bit lately once Nick Pope had come back from injury a few weeks back. Dubravka had been doing really, really well. Far better than he'd done a year ago when he had to deputise for Pope being injured. This time around, he's showed a far more composure and control and shown his superior ability with his feet that Nick Pope doesn't have. Whereas Pope sometimes brings that extra assurance in terms of some of the saves he can make. I think up until the West Ham game on Monday, I would have said Dubravka would probably start because he'd come back into the lineup for the FA Cup game the previous week. I think it's slightly harsh to put too much blame on him for that defeat, because he made some great saves in it as well. But Pope came in to play against West Ham on Monday and kept a clean sheet against West Ham, but still. And I suspect that might mean that Pope's going to get the start. But that's one that I'm not 100% on. Beyond that, since we're missing Lewis Hall at left back, who would have been a shoo-in, and we're missing Sven Botman, who again is the classiest defender we have. Ultimately, that leaves us with Fabian Scher and Dan Burn at centre-back, and probably Trippier on the right and Livramento on the left, or the other way around. I really can't see Matt Target coming in. And I'd be absolutely terrified to see him against Mo Salah. I think Livramento's got a bit more speed, so that would probably lean towards him playing on the left to be up against Salah, whereas Trippier would be a bit slower. But either of them could play either side. Then in the middle, I think the midfield trio speaks for itself. We'll have Joel Linton going around kicking and shoving everybody he can. We'll have Tonali playing slightly withdrawn and Bruno Guimarães, who is the current captain. Then out wide, I think it will be Jacob Murphy on the right in his absolute renaissance of form. He's a bit of a cult hero, I think, Jacob Murphy. Boyhood Newcastle fan, despite not coming from the area. His parents do, or one of his parents does. And he's the kind of person who always puts in the effort and such a huge grin on his face when things go well. He's limited, but he always tries. And he does have a decent hookup with Isak at times. And Isak obviously will be up front. And that list leaves the left-sided forward position, which would have been Liverpool fan Anthony Gordon, of course, up against your fourth choice right back. But no, we can't have that speedy England international Liverpool fan, unfortunately. It will be, I would expect, Harvey Barnes. The only potential alternative way of doing that would be somebody else in midfield and Joel Linton playing out on the left, I think is a possible. But I think we would lose a lot by not having Joel Linton in midfield, because we're going to need some of his destructive capabilities in there, I would think. Other alternatives would possibly be five at the back, which they did against Arsenal in the second leg, which led to some people thinking it was going to be a bit of a negative defensive performance, but actually players stepped out frequently to press all over the place. Newcastle's second goal came from Fabian Schär pressing on the edge of Arsenal's penalty box from an Arsenal goal kick. That's not normally where you'd find your centre-back, but he was following Declan Rice everywhere. That was the tactics that day. But I think given the extent of our injuries, I don't think that's realistic. I think it will be the 4-3-3, and therefore I think it'll be Harvey Barnes coming in. And for somebody like him, it's a big opportunity. He's had a poor season, really, on the whole. Only occasional appearances, and when he hasn't delivered too much, but he does have the capability in him. You know exactly what he'll do. He'll cut in from the left and he'll try and fire a shot across with his right. That's what he does. Everybody knows it, but occasionally it's unstoppable. It would be nice if he took his moment on Sunday. But I think source of Newcastle's goals, if there are to be any, is more likely Isak. But it's slightly troubling that some of his supply won't be the same as he's benefited from. And I think especially down the left, missing Gordon and Lewis Hall is a big worry from that regard.
Interesting stuff. Interesting. We'll see how right you are. I mean, I'll do the same. I'll throw out a Liverpool lineup probably. Again, goalkeeper is, you know, Kelleher's our domestic cup goalkeeper, more or less. He's played two League Cup finals. He's capable of playing a third. Will be interesting because it's not Jurgen Klopp. If this was still Jurgen Klopp, Liverpool manager Kelleher's playing, without a shadow of a doubt, at Wembley on Sunday. It's not Jurgen Klopp, it's Arne Slot. And, you know, he might err towards Alisson, especially with Kelleher expected to move on in the summer. It's not necessarily a case of him needing to keep Kelleher sweet in that respect. So that's a little bit open to debate. It has to be Kwanzaa at right back. We don't really have another option at the minute, unless Endo was asked to play there, but Endo has never played for Liverpool at right back. He's slotted in at centre back before, does that wonderful job of closing games in midfield. He's not started a league game all season, it's not, but he's this majestic, you know, facilitator of getting the result over the finish line. An absolute cult hero of a player, but he'll be sat on the bench. It's going to be Van Dijk and Konate in central defence. Left back, it's got to be Andy Robertson, I think. But, you know, given that he ran around for so long in that game on Tuesday night, there is a potential for fatigue there. So it might well be a case of 60 minutes of Andy Robertson, 30/60 minutes of Tsimikas. But I'd have to expect Andy Robertson to start. You know, when push comes to shove, it's Andy Robertson starting at left back. The midfield three is surely going to be Szoboszlai, McAllister and Gravenberch. Curtis Jones being the other option, but I think, again, more likely to be thrown as a substitute. and then the front three, Salah, Diaz. And then there is a question mark over that extra one. You know, is Gakpo really fit enough to start? If he was fit enough to start, he would be starting. And if they err on caution and Gakpo's on the bench instead, then it's that toss of the coin. Do they stick with Jota? Do they throw chaos to the wind and throw Nunes in from the start? I don't see Nunes starting myself. I think it's likely to be Jota, although I would like it to be Gakpo instead.
Okay. We shall see on all of that, I guess, won't we?
We shall. I'm definitely not going for a prediction, or I'm not asking for an outcome, because you've set your reverse psychology style out for the last 50 minutes, and I would not expect it to change now. In true traditional style, a handshake is being offered and a pennant is being offered across Zencaster.
Absolutely. Are you going to the game, I guess, is a question I should ask.
I'm not. I've not done the League Cup games since. I'll tell you what happened with me in the League Cup. It was 2012 when Dalglish won it, and then FSG sacked him. I had a fit of pique and said that if winning the League Cup isn't good enough for FSG, then they don't need my League Cup money. And I opted out of with a fit of pique and a bit of a strop. I opted out of the automatic cup scheme for that. I still did the FA Cup, still did the European games. And any League Cup tickets I've picked up since then were just like spur ones from friends who could put one my way. And now I'm more of a mind that, I wouldn't take a cup final ticket away from someone who's been to games throughout the season. I'd see that as a moral injustice. So, no, I will be watching this one at home.
Well, on that theme of people who've been to all the League Cup games but can't go to the Cup final, here's me. My children and I have been to every single home Carabao Cup game for Newcastle this season. But since we're not season ticket holders, that put us down in pot six of the whole scheme Newcastle had with all season ticket holders ahead of us. And like Liverpool, we obviously have a season ticket holder cup scheme. You opt in or you opt out. And obviously those who've opted in and have been to several, it makes total sense. They would be the first to get the tickets, quite rightly. But then the next tiers of the ballot went to those who went to various different tiers of season ticket holders. I think season ticket holders who didn't opt in ended up in the same pot as all the members, which is where I was. And that's probably fair enough. So it's various categories of season ticket holder have beaten me out. But I guess it's just a shame that since we've been to all of the League Cup games that we can't go to this. However, yeah. It wasn't unexpected, really, because the allocation is what it is, and the season ticket holder base is the number it is as well.
Yeah, no, but that is exceptionally hard. That is something that Liverpool have changed to their credit. There was a time when you reach a League Cup final, a season ticket holder would be guaranteed a ticket, whether they've been to games or not in that particular competition. And they stopped doing that for a few years ago. So if you had members... someone who wasn't a season ticket holder, but they were a member and they were getting the tickets for the home games, game in, game out, then they have greater priority than a season ticket holder who does not go to those games. And I think absolutely rightly so. The supporters who tick through the turnstiles for those competition games should have priority, whether the season ticket holders or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a contentious issue, obviously, when all the ballot procedure was put out and the way it's went. And I think the pots one to three were all those who were season ticket holders and went to a lot, and they were guaranteed given the allocation. And then the pots four and five went to a ballot and filled out the rest. And it did get as far as a pot six ballot, where I think about 20,000 people were in for about 500 tickets. So the odds were never particularly good. But there's definitely been all sorts of comments, of course, along the lines of, well, season ticket holders should have priority there, the loyal ones. But a season ticket only ever buys you the league games these days. That's what you've bought, is you've bought 19 Premier League games. You haven't bought anything else. You have the chance to put in for the rest and get priority for it.
And if you don't, then
if you don't.
You don't. Yeah. And that's what they do at Liverpool. It is rightly so that despite I'm a season ticket holder, I've not gone to the League Cup games. I don't get a ticket, and that is very correct. I've scrupulously kept up my buying the tickets for FA Cup games. I've got every single away Liverpool FA Cup ticket since they started the loyalty scheme, since they started kind of like taking these records, which goes back to about 2003, I think they started doing it. And that was in order to get tickets for an FA Cup trip to Yeovil. so I am one of those at Liverpool who kind of like, if there's a mad kind of like draw like that, I think Wimbledon a couple of seasons ago, we got something like 800 tickets, and I was one of those that got a ticket because I've got all of those on. So if Liverpool get to an FA Cup final, which they're not going to this season, then you know I do have that guarantee of not just a home FA Cup ticket, but an away one. But I've worked hard to keep that going over the years. The League Cup, I had that fit of peak in 2012. You've sacked Kenny, you won the League Cup. That's not good enough for you, then my money's not good enough for you. So
I suspect Arne Slot, win or lose, isn't going to be getting hoofed out come Monday, is he?
No, not at all. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, you know, the Liverpool fans who are going to be there at Wembley are the right ones to be there. I'm disappointed that you're not going to be there, Aidan, because you know, for me, it sounds like you absolutely should be.
Well, Perhaps. But on the whole, I think those who have got the tickets have proven their loyalty in one way or another. So I hope they enjoy their day, and I hope it goes unlike every other League Cup final that we've ever been in.
There is it's the hope that kills you, but it's the hope that kind of like
I need to channel my Paul McParlane. He's more positive than I am.
Yes, you do. Yeah, you do need to get off and talk to Paul after this without a shadow of doubt. He'll be massaging your shoulders and be like your corner man. You can do this. He'll get you to spit into the bucket half an hour before kickoff. Put your gum shield in, and away you'll be. Whether you'll be flat on your back within 60 seconds, I can't tell you or not.
Undoubtedly.
it's like that Harold Graham fight against, who was it, the one that swung the punch and knocked him down like a tree. Oh, it's going to annoy me that now. But I always remember, and it was on the opening montage for Grandstand, very cruelly, for far too long. A fight he was dominating, then he got caught square on the chin, and it literally just went bang. So yeah, it's either going to be that for Newcastle, or you're going to kind of like, you know, it's going to be a slugfest that goes to the 15th, not the 12th round. You know, going back to the IBF years of it stretching to 15 rounds, I think.
And I don't know if I could handle that, but we shall see. I might be several beers in if we speak on Sunday evening.
Absolutely. Well, I think I might be as well. So it's got to be chaos one way or another, Aidan. I am absolutely positive. Throw in one more as well that I'd thought of. And Liverpool versus Newcastle as a, you know, in historical terms, right, across the years and the games that they've played, give me your Liverpool, Newcastle versus Liverpool example of pleasure and an example of pain. So heaven and hell, pleasure and pain. We're talking about the go-to Newcastle image of a victory, of a good day against Liverpool of the past, and the stuff of nightmares.
The stuff of nightmares is obviously easy. That is 1996 and a certain league game that ended with Kevin Keegan slumped over the advertising hoardings. That one is easy. For the positive moments, well, there's not so many to pick from. There's a couple, though, that occur to me. One is, I think it was Newcastle's first Premier League season or second. I can't recall, but it was our last league victory at Anfield. It was a 2-0 win, Andy Cole getting both goals. And it was a weekend, ironically, I was in Liverpool visiting my grandparents, and we toyed with the idea of just turning up and trying to get in. I don't know how realistic that would have been. But anyway, we didn't. And listening to it on Radio Merseyside, and sheer delight at the fact it went our way. But it hasn't gone our way at Anfield since in the league. However, it has in the League Cup. That's one that I also recall, which was a 1-0 victory in late 95. So again, this is that same season of the 4-3. It's never occurred to me that if we could have switched the two results, that would have been fine. But there was a League Cup tie at Anfield that Newcastle won 1-0 thanks to a Steve Watson goal. And this one I watched, probably not live, it was probably highlights without knowing the score, in my student house in Manchester, where two of my housemates were Liverpool fans. So I vividly recall leaping up, yelling, and ungraciously flipping them both the V's as Watson's goal went in, because you know, they'd been giving me all sorts of grief about how they were expecting victory and so on. So that was, it was a sweet moment, but again, they're few and far between. But that is a League Cup moment of Newcastle over Liverpool.
It very much is. It very much is.
How about you then?
I don't need to go into it, Aidan. You know. I mean, oh, go on then. You've twisted me out.
Yeah.
I could go for any of the 4-3s. I could go for a 4-2s. 74 Cup final, suppose. No, I'm going to go with, I think it was September or October 87, the Beardsley versus Mirandinha game, in which Steve Nicholl scored the hat trick. You know, if someone says to me Liverpool versus Newcastle, you know, that's the one I automatically springs to mind, live on the BBC on the Sunday afternoon. And yeah, it just had a bit of everything going for it, that one. Yeah, that's always my go-to, Liverpool versus Newcastle vibe. In terms of the pain,
has there been any?
Do you know what? There has there even there. I'll tell you what, there was one. It would have been at St. James Park around about 2003-ish. I think it was still the Julia era. And it was a game that nearly got postponed. It was December, certainly the winter months. It was going to be one of those daft kind of like half-five, 6 o'clock kickoffs. It was freezing. It was absolutely horrendous weather. We got up to Tyneside, and I kind of wanted the game to be postponed because I was ludicrous. Why I went, just out of sheer stubbornness. At a point in time where I was going everywhere, I was doing all the home games, all the away games, and you just didn't miss a game. And I don't think I've ever been as ill at a football match. And it was like it was proper full on flu. This wasn't a self inflicted. I drank a few too many or anything like that. This was simply just I was literally ill. And it was one of the most insipid Liverpool performances of that era. I think it must have been like 2002-03 or 2003-04. So that bit where kind of like the Julia era's starting to kind of like unravel, and there's a bit of disquiet over the style of play, and we just didn't play at all. We didn't tip up, we didn't create anything, you know. I think we lost 1-0. And it was just a proper miserable afternoon / early evening in the winter. Sick as a dog, and just kind of like remember sitting there and standing there because everyone was stood up as well, so we couldn't even sit down. It was a proper one where it kind of like got you in the kidneys as well and stuff like that. And it was kind of like, yeah, it was literally pain. You know, both the football on offer and my health that day was absolutely and to top it all off, Big Andy, the, you know, the mate, he's the fellow who does the mosaics at Anfield, creates the mosaics at Anfield, and he would drive everywhere. He's one of these that doesn't like being a passenger in a car, just likes to drive, so he'd always drive the away games. Yeah, at the time, his CD of choice in the car driving around the country was Coldplay.
Oh dear.
What was the early, might even be the first album, something about Russia Blood to the Head, I think it was, which does have a couple of decent songs on it before they've gone all kind of like Bono and yeah, let's do adverts for electric cars and all this kind of crap. But I can remember, yeah, I was driving through the night to get home and kind of like thinking, Coldplay, I'm ill. That was a shit performance. Yeah,
someone's singing on about yellow.
Yeah, it's all yellow too, and it's kind of like, yeah, this isn't going down in the memoirs of the great days when I come to write that particular book.
Well, so, little did you know then that it would be able to make a mark and make an appearance on this occasion.
Absolutely.
2025.
absolutely. So, yeah, there's my pain. It's more of a personal kind of slant on that one. And yeah.
Actual pain. That will do.
Actual pain at St. James Park. So, you know, there is hope, and I have got a bit of a cough, so maybe it's a kind of like a, maybe there's a bit of a symbiosis here, Aidan. Your chances are rising by the second.
Well, good. I mean, I would leave it with a comment of may the best team win, but no, absolutely not. I don't want the best team to win.
May the team who scores most goals win the game. That will do it.
That will do it perfectly.
Aidan, it's been a joy, and we will reprise this with joy for one and annoyance, some kind of discomfort for the other, I'm sure.
I'm sure we will. I look forward to it? I don't know.
Well, you know what if Newcastle win, I'll be most congratulatory about it. I'll be moving the I'll be a gentleman, Aidan. I promise you, we'll be gentle with you, and it'll be therapy. And if you win, you know, you like rip, you deserve. You absolutely deserve your moments of joy. Spare me nothing, okay?
We shall see how it goes.
Excellent. So, League Cup final. Here we come. Well, we don't come. We're going to start watching on the television. Metaphorically, here we come. Aidan, thanks so much. It's been a joy. We were going to do about half an hour, and obviously it's stretched to double that.
These things happen. That's maybe a sign of things to come as well.
It is. It's going to go into extra
time. Extra half hour.
Absolutely going to do it. Brilliant. Two joins again for the reprisal of this League Cup final. It's going to be something, and the chaos is going to be involved. There's no doubt about it. We're not going to reconvene this and say it's been a goalless draw and someone's won 5-4 on penalties.
It's certainly not.
It's not happening, Aid. It's not happening.
There will be carnage of some kind.
There will. I'm fully expecting Darwin Núñez to be at the centre of something, whether that's a positive or negative thing for Liverpool. But yes, brilliant. Looking forward to it. All that leaves me to say is please do join us for the reprisal and the rest of these Football Times content and the lexicon of so much that we do. Thank you and goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.